You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, everyone. We're going to be listening to a song together today. We're going to be debuting a track by the band Husbandry. The song is called Drop by Drop. It's their new single. Now, very quickly, I'm going to say that this is a band that has been weirdly close to me. Associates of both self.
It makes it sound like they like. I woke up at the grocery store and on the other aisle. Like it's no, you're friends because you've worked on projects.
This is my new. This is my new band, Swim Fan.
It says yeah. I'm stalking them. Associates of both Self Defense Family and Drug Church. We're actually indebted to them in a lot of ways. And they are a consummate New York City band. They play post-hardcore, but we're talking about weirdo, like, diehard Leeway fans, you know? Like, it's just the strangest collection of people have come together to make very capable post-hardcore. Up to this point in their career, it's been too mathy for the masses. It's just been that type of challenging, borrowing a little too much from early Dillinger, perhaps, for a lot of our listeners. On this single, sorry, everybody, I'm editorializing now. On this single, you're getting just straight up post-hardcore. And I think that a lot of our listeners, it's going to hit the sweet spot for them. So happy to debut this. This is through Static Era Records, who are another one of our friends. And give it a listen now. Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And everybody, I'm going to be on AirPods today, as I am in the loading dock of a House of Blues in, does anybody remember where I am? Dallas. Yes.
This is a very Dropkick Murphys moment for Patrick. He's getting blue collar working class at the big clubs. So
yeah, just watching people.
He's shipping up to Dallas. Oh,
he's watching the blue collar experience from his car door.
Here's a question for you fellas. If you were not to be morbid, but if you were murdered in front of the entire world, and you know, and it was grisly, and like a portion of your skull went flying off, would you want people to kind of make it a pop culture, a kind of marker of some type where
here's where JFK got his fucking head blown off.
I think there's a mural upstairs at the House of Blues that, you know, it has pop culture icons like Kenny Rogers in it or whatever, but I only walked past it very briefly, but I think it's recreating the Jack Ruby photo. And I'm just curious. I would be at peace with it. I enjoy yourself, everybody. But like a lot of people would not, and a lot of people would find it bad taste. And certainly the Kennedys have got to be in the weirdest position in the world where their family legacy includes just grisly assassinations that they can't avoid, right? Like
they're the most memed.
Yes, the most memed pop culture things that,
like I say, Jack Ruby, you can picture it right now.
Yes.
That famous picture with his hands behind his back. Like, yeah.
I mean, it's like Mickey Mouse and Kennedy's head exploding are just American icon imagery. I don't know. How would
you want that? I guess not. I don't know.
But I mean, that means I'm like famous enough or I've done enough that like it is, if I'm like just some Joe Schmo, you know what I mean? I can picture the person who stood in front of the tank at Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know their name, but I can picture who it is. You know what I mean? It's if you're famous enough that it's like, hey, something happened here, or you're so beyond reproach that like people go, no, we can make fun of it because like it's the Ken. I mean, it's
right
at Kennedy's is fucking, you know, like.
Think about it. Tank Man and Falling Man are two of the most morbid and upsetting images you can conjure in your mind.
Let me say this as a flip to it, because I know at least for Patrick, I think this is of an interest to at least passing, like weirdo morbid tourism. Like, oh, this is the place where that dude got his skull cracked in on the thing. Remember?
For sure. Yeah.
So if that could be your legacy, is that whenever somebody visits Rensselaer, it's like, oh, that's where Pat Kinlan, the police used the stop sign through his chest and he was stuck there. Mm. That's the stop sign. Would you want that or too much? What?
I mean, I don't know. Now I have a stepson, so maybe I wouldn't want him walking around with that, like whatever. Like, you know, if I was shot to death or whatever. But prior to that, I think, you know, it's fair game. And I guess it is just ultimately fair game, right? Like, we have to make light of things that are, I mean, people's heads. Yeah, like a portion of your skull flying off is upsetting no matter who you are, right? So, like,
right.
We kind of got to make light of it or deal with the, all right, let's do some sponsors.
Jeez. We got to leave a closed casket then.
Yeah, that was going to from the fella. What's the from the movie Willow with the skull mask? It is closed casket activities.
Burgle Cut is one of the characters in Willow. There you go.
Okay, give me a character name that you think represents To Live a Lie from Neverending Story.
Neverending Story. Who's I like the rock guy. What's his name?
You think we talked about this not that long ago? Rock Eater.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
Let's say Tom. If you can, let's try this. What is both Run for Cover and E.T.'s favorite candy?
Oh, Reese's Pieces.
Mm. Right, and of course, the almighty Convulse Records, who we will say Patrick, what is a good, I have one in my mind, but what is a good 80s movie creature that would represent Convulse Records?
Pumpkinhead.
I'm going Harry and the Hendersons. So,
they're on the mountains. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Short and sweet. These labels are all hobbing, got new stuff going, keeping it tight because Patrick is in a van. Go show love. Today, I'm going to tell you go to their band camp. Go to their band
camp. Yeah, do that.
A good way to support, good way to show action, and listen to something new because that's
a very good way to trip over something.
That's right. Very cool. So thank you to them, and thank you to you guys. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
It's 90 degrees and humid, and I'm in a van in a loading dock where the staff of the House of Blues uses it to take their smoke breaks. So it's a, I've been worse, certainly, but maybe 90% rather than 100 today.
Tom, how you doing today, buddy?
91%.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
He took the upper. I would like for it to be 90 degrees. I'd like to go outside.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm not that mad at this. This is all right.
You got a pretty big, yeah. So you're out with Alkaline Trio. You're in Dallas, Texas tonight.
Yeah, we could talk about that. I don't want to say I wasn't shocked in any sort of way. I didn't have any type of background with Alkaline Trio guys. Like, I know their music, but I didn't
like their music even before playing with them. You were one of the few, like, they're one of those few bands that I like that you go, no, they do have a couple. They got some bangers.
Yes, it's funny. I got yelled at. Somebody online said, "Yeah, he said they only have three good tracks." And
you also say they're about Hatebreed, so I mean, you could be wrong.
Well, somebody in my life said, "Hey, can you stop getting away from the bag, please? Please, can you stop like just saying things that the fight?" But I don't remember saying that. And if I did, what I mean by it is they have three excellent tracks, and
which is says more than most, like 99% of bands. Would you say?
I would say that Alkaline Trio has three records that are exceptional records, two records that are maybe all-timers. And then if you want to expand on it from there, you certainly have songs on each record. But I think that, I say it on stage each night, and I'm not bullshitting, literally the best in genre. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not listening to anybody saying that there's anything else in this genre that is better. These are just better songs than the other stuff in the genre. So I'm a fan. I'm not like my bandmates. My bandmates are straight up lifers. They love this band. But I'm a fan. I think they're good at what they do for sure.
Pat can really see that, but I can see it.
Bright. Yeah, he can.
I saw it. I see what I'm looking at.
I mean, they play a nice set list, a little bit of everything. Nobody leaves upset.
Oh, no. I don't mean this in a fucked up way. They know they're servicing their fans. They're doing, like, they're playing a set that every fan would be like, yeah, I'm game.
Even with the new songs, which is pretty rare this far into the game that they play new songs and people care.
Yes, that's true. But the new record was very well received. I don't know. Firstly, those dudes, that's what I was driving at, is that these dudes are incredibly amiable and welcoming, and it's been really nice so far. And Bob is showing us a grimace.
I don't know what's happening.
Courtroom sketch of Tom's grimace on trial for murder. He had a hard time at the Alkaline Trio gig.
Listen,
nice dude.
If you're nice dudes, and thanks for
listening. Appreciate your Patreon support, Alkaline Trios.
Listen. I'm not ass kissing. I already got the fucking tour. I just think that I was really pleasantly surprised that they're as warm as they are.
You got to check out this band AFI too. You'll like them and Blink-182. You'll love it. It's fantastic. All right,
but that's what I'm saying. Alkaline Trio destroys both.
Wow, that's heavy. That's
destroys.
What are we doing? Let it. Oh God.
Listen.
Patrick should tour. We're going to start talking about U2 as well, because I think they should take Drug Church out.
Listen, you are being dismissive of a band that I guarantee, I would bet money on you liking. If you took the top listened tracks from the first two records, I have not a doubt in my mind you would enjoy them.
I listened to more than one Alkaline Trio record. I did a podcast episode of talking about it, where I listened to the record at least 5 times. And I can break it down track by track.
Hold on. Let me find...
From Here to Infirmary?
I don't know. It was just the
hits
point.
On that one.
The dog pop on that one. Record.
From it, to, yeah, from Here to Infirmary and, yeah. I mean, there's literally hits on every record. It's kind of crazy.
There are, yeah. Listen, Tom and I do not have a ton of overlap in our non-hardcore.
No, so we're just joking. I'm enjoying this.
No, I know. I appreciate it. I'm not... I'm trying not to...
Patty, who's out with you?
Yeah, cure yum. Yeah, cure yum.
How do you mean?
Is Dookie out with you?
No, Dookie's meeting up with us for the Chicago show, New York show, a number of shows. He took photos in Southern California. We've got Alex, who is our sound guy, also drummer of Gel, and Morgan, who is usually a guitar tech for the band The Story So Far and an accomplished musician in his own right. He's doing merch for us.
Oh, wow.
We can talk about how having more people than that is a little absurd, in my opinion, when you have a van, and that will lead us to the Escuela Grind conversation.
The record I did was Good Morning, but I listened to the first three as well. So, good luck. Guys, let's talk some hardcore. Patrick, so far, seems like it's been an enjoyable tour. Regardless of what everybody loves Alkaline Trio. How are their, I'm assuming, and I might be wrong, most of the people at these shows are there to see them.
you would assume correct, yeah.
How has the warmth been for Drug Church, et cetera? Like, I know you usually, your meet and greet was just before this, so.
No meet and greet. Listen, here's what I'll say, is when you play music where you have no tonality to your voice and you're yelling, essentially, it's easy to push people away. My experience is that people have got to see that you're smiling. People have got to see that you're enjoying yourself, because otherwise you come off like the band that came in to bring down a mood. But I'm a pretty smiley guy when I'm playing. So I think that has something to do with the fact that we are doing, in my view, very well. Did not know what to expect, and the reception has been really nice. They've got pretty, seemingly pretty open-minded fans, or at least they are dialed into the type of music that we do.
Well, and that's always, it's something that's been talked about for a long time. I think there was a fear that this happened way, way, way back with Hatebreed, but it didn't really. It's what friends of mine, older friends, called the Slayer effect, where, and I'm sure the same thing, Tom, I'm sure that's not a new term to you either, where bands would go tour with Slayer, and Slayer, like, would take out decent bands, whatever, and nobody gave a shit, because they were just there to see Slayer.
Like,
so
you have less of a, like, no, like, disrespectful to an extent. Not even like, oh, it wasn't like people moshing, like, Sick of It All did a Slayer tour when Sick of It All was like kind of at their heights.
Yep.
And they're like, New York was cool. The rest of the tour was like dreadful because people were just like chanting Slayer and like couldn't give less than a shit.
Yeah. Like it was deleterious to the band's morale, spirit, and overall desire to do music to go open for Slayer. I believe AFI actually did hit that point for a minute too, where it was like, oh shit, these are just such diehards. But that is also what I've heard Alkaline Trio is that they have receptive fans. Kudos to those people. Kudos to people checking new stuff out. You know, privately, we've talked about it more than once. It's really cool that Drug Church is getting these opportunities because the music makes sense. It's it makes sense that people who like Alkaline Trio could really get into Drug Church too. So continued success your way. What has been the worst non-gig part of tour? Give us a good bad story.
I got no stories except, I'm under rested, not to be totally disgusting, but my body fails a little bit when that's the case. Meaning like I gotta change my underwear after a show. It's just like, you know, it's the typical bullshit of being kind of like a tired, bad diet sort of touring existence.
You ever come back to the van and see someone putting like jelly in your peanut butter and be like, yo, man.
You know,
that's going to segue into another segment we're going to talk about.
We just put the expensive nut butters on our rider, and today they hit us with cashew butter. Pretty excited.
Wow. I mean, that's over $10. Little Justin's. Look at that.
What's the weirdest nut butter you've had? Like, do they make pistachio nut butter? I'm curious.
I've never had it. I'm sure they do, but I've never had it. I like sunflower butter the best. Sunflower nut butter.
Sunflower is the go-to in our house. Also, anyone who's an OG, like, man, sunflower butter sucks. Major improvements over the last 10 years, I'd say.
Yeah, and if your kid has a nut allergy, they can eat it.
It's the go-to. So at my kid, even if your kid doesn't have a nut allergy, but there's nut allergies at the school, a.k.a. every fucking school, sunflower butter is good, and just the generic kind you can get anywhere is pretty good, whatever the one with the yellow label. All right, well, I'm sorry to hear about your underwear. I hope you're getting new underwear every day.
Hey, you put that on your fucking rider. Underwear,
that's the rider, yeah. The socks, that's like if you said, oh, yeah, we get new socks every day, I'd be like, that's it. You've hit the pinnacle. You've reached it.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, I've heard about Davey Havoc's Nutribullet at every show.
I didn't know that.
This is like Price is Right. They're just throwing Nutribullets around. Like,
I mean, if you look at him, he's pretty, yeah. I mean...
He's jacked. He takes care of himself. And who wants to be riding around a bus with, like, you know, a
dirty ass Nutribullet? So, yeah, he's not taking it with him. He leaves it there.
He leaves it there, and
who gets the Nutribullet? Some menus at it.
Someone who works there. That's cool.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, all right. I'm with that. Okay.
Shout out to Davey Havoc and his Nutribullet.
Don't say that. That's the best
part. Yo, don't say that too loud.
Shout out to Davey Havoc. Why?
Around who you're around. I'm just saying.
Oh, are the ops around?
He's got ops. Or they are. You're on tour with some ops.
All right.
Okay. I mean, this might be old news, but it's, yeah.
There's old. So, all right, we're up to date with that. Nothing too new in my world. Lots of youth basketball out here. Tom, anything new in your world before we talk on the hardcore minutia of the day, Nutribullets and all?
I went to go see rival schools on Thursday the other night.
How was that?
Incredible.
Yeah.
I had the realization. I'm like, is rival schools the best Walter thing?
It's yes, might be. Yeah.
And like, because they did all the hits from the first record, 69 Guns, 8 Parts for B Actors, closing with Ring It Out. I'm like, Ring It Out should be a hit. I don't want to live in America.
It's a hit. No, I agree. Ring It Out's a hit.
And they were awesome. They were fucking...
Any parts of the actors a hit. 69 Guns is a good song. My son, I played Gorilla Biscuits the other day. Just hadn't heard it in a while, so I put it on. And he goes, oh, this sounds like Momo music, because his joke, personally, is that Amanda only listens to, like, yelling, screaming hardcore, like Hatebreed or else. And then I like Yacht Rock, which is not far from the truth. But he likes Rival Schools quite a bit. He really likes Rival Schools.
Oh,
put Gorilla Biscuits on, and he was like, this sounds like Momo music. It's all right. He's like, it's a little, you know. I was like, oh, this is the guy who does Rival Schools. He's like, Rival Schools is way better. Okay, there's the people who disagree, but I like your opinions.
Well, yeah, they were great. Thursday were great. They did the We're All the Time record, and like, they're still great, man. You know, I have a soft space in my heart for the boys from Thursday, so I thought they were great. It was a great show. A lot of people way oversold at fucking Urban Plaza. Maybe not oversold. Before DOB comes down, but like sold to the. What was funny? Here's what I didn't realize.
To the absolute limit, probably.
No, so like whatever their limit is, I didn't realize that they adjusted depending on the type of show.
Oh yeah,
I never realized that. So it's like. Oh, their legal limit is 1,100 people. But if they're doing like Crowbar, they'll do like 950.
Yep.
Because they have to take into consideration the size of the bodies coming
into
the room.
Wow. That's real.
Right. So like, even Thursday, they're like, yeah, we did it to our capacity, but like this fucking 45-year-old's coming.
Yeah.
Like they're adults that are bigger than they used to be.
But if it's a K-pop show, it's a different story.
Right. Like my another buddy that works there, they're like, yeah, like if we book some like teenage like TikTok thing, there'll be 1,100 people and it'll look like 11, like half full because they're so small and are on top of each other.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's the world of...
We have so much to talk about, so I just let's hit this one really quick. And I don't know if you hit it the last podcast. Have we destroyed the guy who is responsible for St. Vitus' woes?
Do we talk on that on air, Tom?
No, because I don't think we knew at the time when we recorded that we like what.
No, we didn't. Yeah, go ahead.
It was an asshole who got thrown out, was racist, and said some fucking shitty stuff. And then weaponized the Department of Buildings against Vitus until it was too late. And then, you know, and then the DOP had to, like, fucking listen. Showed up at a fucking Mindforce show during Balmora, right before Mindforce. And they shut the place down, and Vitus is going to be closed for a little bit until they figure out all the, you know, the licensures and all that stuff that they need. And it's mostly bureaucratic bullshit. It's not safety stuff. It's more like... You don't have it like in New York, you need a cabaret license to mosh.
Yeah.
You know, or you need like fucking, you know, like this kind of, it's everything is like a, it's all, and this, you know, and I was explaining to somebody, I'm like, this is easy money for the city.
Yeah.
Because this this could cost them, say, I'm guessing, it cost them $50,000, there was no labor that got, and it got the city $50,000 for nothing.
That's right.
So, of course, they're going to enforce this kind of stuff rather than stuff that they're not going to get any money off.
Yeah. Summation, it's a small man who's leveraging the power of the state against a small business. He should feel bad about himself, and I hope he goes to church.
Well, everyone's got that, his name and everything. Like, he'll get caught out there.
Okay.
and give it like one. a hard talking to.
Yeah, not, exactly.
Nothing else.
Stern. No, we're going to... I'm eventually going to get to that. We're going to talk about Stern conversations today.
I would say.
So, Bob, do you have an ordered list of what we need to discuss?
We're loose and open. I want to let you take it really quick before we go forward. I did want to say, because Tom said that Thursday Rival School Show is big. You're playing big rooms every single goddamn night. Do not take for granted the moment we're in, everyone in the sound of our voices, where you're getting to see bands you love with 3,500 people. I say this as someone who loves being in the basement, loves the VFW hall more than anything. But being able to be in these rooms and see bands who you love, believe in, think are fantastic, play to that kind of thing, goddamn rare.
Okay. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to say something that maybe you guys will find a delicate way to say what I'm going to say, and I'll be caught out there looking like a fucking hater, okay?
Go.
I was so... These are not my friends. These are just peers. So I'm not... You know, I don't have any stake in this. It was really beautiful to see Ceremony play such a big room. Really, right. Really, really beautiful.
Beautiful.
Really beautiful.
Amazing.
And I was very happy for them. And then I realized there was a barrier. And
if 3,700 people are going to have to. You got it.
I understand the concession is completely inappropriate, though. Like I understand there's no way around it. You know, to the people that put the show on, we know each other. It's not an assault on you. It is just, that's just a discouraging thing and an otherwise completely beautiful moment. And I did not realize it because I was looking at this bit photos of Big Room and I was like, God damn, good for Ceremony. What a win. It's so cool. But this deep into a career where they've taken so many chances, I'm like, fucking, like, oh, it's awesome. And then, just as Tom says, 3,700 cap, there's not one in the United States that you're getting to go without a barrier. And
you have to really work hard. And
can I be an old man? Ask Bob how it's like to do a over 3,700 cap without, but here's my question as an old man hater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm watching Ceremony do that record,
mm-hmm.
If there was a barrier, I would be infuriated because because people are moshing on the stage, knocking into guitars. I would
true.
I want to say that in typical California style, there were still people who got up on the stage and not like one or two. There was some stage storming, if you will. I don't know that. I think it was an interesting thing because, look, we all just said this. That was incredible. I take a minute to tip my cap to, obviously, the dudes from Sound and Fury who helped put it together. But most importantly, Ceremony, who put the whole thing together too. Such a cool thing. I was thinking about them a lot because, to me, my preference of their material is the later era stuff. I really love it. And but you can go through their entire catalog and find really impressive material. So certainly not excluding Rohnert Park, which they played. Tom's not wrong. Pat, you're not wrong either. Hate a barrier. Hate it. There will be no barriers at the Have Heart show in Boston that we're doing. 3,000 plus people. But that's not easy. And that's also not, it's just not easy. You can't get that everywhere. There's places where you just straight up can't get that. Los Angeles being one of those places that's making it very, very difficult. So shout out to the people who've rectified that or are working it in. So anyways, I wanted to put that out there. St. Vitus, they will be back. I did. You know what, Tom, maybe you saw this too. I don't know if this is your waves, Patrick. I saw a lot of positive memories of St. Vitus. That's been like a really important venue for the last, I don't know, 10 years-ish more?
Sorry, I'm back.
If you St. Vitus, listen,
very important venue for the last 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I feel like there's been an outgrowth of other venues because of St. Vitus.
It's also every city in the world needs a capable club.
A centralized place, right.
Yes, a professional venue that is sub 500 cap. It is, even in New York City. Yes, it is necessary. So they haven't just done a good job. They've played a role perfectly. I was disappointed to hear the news about them, and they will be back.
They will definitely be back. They have, people working on it with them already. They'll be back. It's annoying bureaucracy, which is just how it is.
All right. So, yes. Let's get into things.
I'm chopping at the bit. We got so much to talk about. We've got spiked pre-workout.
This is the funniest one. Let's start there. It's the funniest one.
Okay. Funny, but let's hold on. Let's do
it's fucked
things.
Up. Though.
Also, super. Yes. Like, come on. Like,
we're gonna do the thing. We're gonna do the thing, the Kennedy thing, where we acknowledge that it's terrible.
Yeah.
And then we also say, yeah, but that's pretty fucking wild and crazy.
Pat, is this us in a post Shane Gillis world?
Well, you know what? You know how I am. I just want people to understand that I wish everybody the best, and then we can do our jokes. So, everybody, it is wrong to violate the sanctity of somebody's body in any regard. That goes from, giving LSD to somebody to giving them estrogen. And that's what happened in this case. Everybody, if you haven't heard what we're talking about, it's reached news. I saw it on, like, thepost.com. You know what I mean? Like, the New York Post. A band, help me out, from where? Texas? Where the fuck they from? I have not heard a lick of their music, I don't think. They've made my radar the same time as most people's radars when they said, hey, we have dissolved our relationship with our singer. As it turns out, he was giving spiked pre-workout to his bandmate whose fiance he was obsessed with. Now, there's so many fucking questions within that.
This is the plot of a bad Tom Green. This is like the Freddy Got Fingered sequel.
SVU. This is an episode of SVU. Now my first question is, where the like, I've got trans people in my feed who can't get their estrogen and really want it. So my question is, where are you getting estrogen?
Yeah, what fire shop are you working in that you can get this shit? Like, yeah,
where you get that shit? Amazon.
No, but then apparently the answer is, could you guess? Because as we've talked about, these people, no, these people appear in our DMs occasionally. The Gear Gym, if you are at a gear gym, the same way that you can get testosterone in that locker room, you can also get estrogen. So apparently that's the answer.
Wild.
So, because you've got to balance these things out if you're cycling, right? Like, if whatever. Anyway, so the story is that the kid who was dosing his bandmate with estrogen got drunk and coughed that information up. Yeah. Now, I try very hard at this stage of my life not to have any secrets, right? Like, it's too much hassle to be walking around with secrets. But I think that if I was actively, no, I don't want to say poisoning. I don't know what the fuck word you use.
I mean, it's a serious criminal act, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like I want to make a bunch of jokes, but
the victim was having, like physical issues, like, and going to the doctor and being like, "What's up?" And they're like, "I don't know."
Like, so listen, everybody, I don't know, but the gentleman who said, "Hey, I've been having some medical issues," the simplest one you're going to probably experience, you're going to get hit with gynecomastia and stuff like that. You there's just basic, like, secondary sex characteristics that we don't think about as being major, you know, like, they're probably not life altering, but they would strike you as very odd if they started happening to you, and you would be very deeply concerned. So,
especially if you're taking pre-workout, that means you're very, like, you're working out and you're paying attention to your body.
Shit. So
if someone told me, I probably wouldn't notice. A heavier person, you may not notice, but, like, if you're in shape, you're going to notice when your boobs are bigger.
That's all true. So this is utterly insane. Everybody don't do this. And best of luck to all parties involved. I don't like it when hardcore makes the fucking radar for shit as crazy and stupid as this. Love and light to all the parties. I hope we get to the other side of it. On a less serious note, I guess. But I don't care to talk about this one. I find it totally fucking dull. Some band that plays a style of metalcore that is just, like, local and embarrassing. Threatened a cease and desist against another band, I guess more of a hardcore band, and the internet spent, like, a long weekend clowning on the steam metalcore thing, whatever. I don't care about this shit, everybody. Unless you guys have something to talk about, I found it completely boring. When dudes look clueless, like, there was a band that took offense, I think, to Drug Church. It might have been Self-Defense. We played with them somewhere, and this, like, fake the band Tool style fucking thing where, you know, there's fingerless gloves involved and shit. like one of those bands, like, almost like they didn't pay to play our show, but it's that type of vibe, whatever, played. And the guy took exception to something I said, didn't like my vibe or something, even though I'm sure that I was not rude to him. And he went online and tried being a weird little turd about it. And it's like, listen, everybody, you just ignore this type of dude, right? Like, this is,
you're punching down.
Yeah, it's a type of dude, guy. It's just, I don't, and everybody pointed out, hey, the singer looks like a kid, but in fact, he's a grown man. That doesn't make it, to me, I'm really not touching it. Do you, like, if you are doing something that is really childlike and clueless and stupid, and you are a grown man, then I go, oh, shit isn't right inside,
right?
You know what I mean? I'm leaving alone, you know what I mean? So everybody, love and light.
Yeah. Okay. So instead of going in on that, because I don't even, thankfully that didn't hit my wire.
Oh, I saw the video.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. Something that's like, what that was. I saw it
on my life, click. Whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I didn't click, because why would that's, yeah, it has nothing to do with my life. Patrick, tell us, you tried to engage on metalcore on Twitter. How was that? And what metalcore thoughts would you like to fire off? Give us some rapid thoughts here.
Because I think we have a new shirt. If we ever make a new shirt, I want that on the back.
So I went to war with two friends. That is Taylor Young and Ian Shelton, who their little Twitter fingers broke out when they saw, you know, a real one talking about metalcore.
They saw Grandpappy throwing out the hot takes. They had to get in the kitchen, huh?
Yeah, and then I had to put them in the shed. And here's the thing.
Can I read the tweet?
Yeah, you can read the tweets.
Because these are great. I love it.
Everybody, these are friends. It's entirely possible that both Taylor and Ian will do the next self-defense record. There's no actual beef here.
So self-defense, which is Patrick. My feed is populated by bad metalcore takes today. If you're a metalcore fan of the Architects generation, how does my era of shit sound to you? Is Cave In like listening to Buddy Holly? Our buddy Taylor responds.
Fair question.
Taylor responds, Norma Jean is just as bad as Architects. Then Ian responds, why are you interacting with Pat about metalcore? Why is any of this happening? To which Pat responds,
fair question.
Death to false power violence. We're talking mosh over here. To which Ian responds, shut the fuck up, bitch.
And that's how it
well, then it went on to
it got hot. Yeah, the stove got hot.
And then it went on to like a fundamental question that we have on this podcast about what is and is not. What is and is not hardcore, because I don't think Ian's band or my band are hardcore bands. However, Ian has a much broader definition, and so that topic came up. But whatever. But here's the thing. I'm actually, obviously, I was just being adversarial and contrarian with some friends, but I don't actually mind if Norma Jean is a step too far, because if you love, Converge, what would be an even more fucking fundamental metalcore than Converge? Give me an example of
fundamental.
I don't know.
What do you mean? Like more like rudimentary? Like
Like roots.
Like Unbroken or like Zayo?
No. Further.
Miss Rorschach or Integrity.
Yeah. Okay. So, fascinating conversation there that we won't get into today was why do so many people consider Rorschach the origin of metalcore, but Integrity just a metallic influenced hardcore band? Compelling conversation to have there. But
Then you have to go, if you follow the Integrity trade, then all of a sudden you're saying that Judge is, and then people get weird about it.
Yeah, but I'm open to the conversation.
Right. And Rorschach's not, Rorschach sounds like a lot of punk stuff to me. So, anyways, yes.
So let's say, if you love Rorschach, then certainly Norma Jean or even Cave-In, who most people in that world have at least some respect for, even if they don't love it necessarily. But Rorschach, if you go to the Norma Jean space, that's a step too far. Now, Architects is a step too far for me, right? And it's just, that's fine. Each person gets off the bus at a different stop. It's all good. You know what I mean? So I don't actually care about anybody's definition of metalcore. I saw some horrendous takes, but those are
no names, but most memorable take that was like, whoa, Beyond Your Pale.
Let's see. When did I see that?
Isn't Beyond the Pale a great metalcore band name?
I'm sure it's out there. Listen, when you play these venues that are in the sort of capacity that Drug Church plays, you run into some show flyers that you just, you know, it'll be like, Cryptopsy or whatever the fuck it is, like thing that you've actually heard of. And then the opener will be something like, you know, like bomb the mausoleum, you know, like it'll be like some shit like that, like way down at the bottom. So what did I see? There is an awful lot of love for bands' records that are well past the sell-by date that I have in my mind, right? Now, Tom, what's your feeling to taking the fact that you might know some of the fellas from back in the day, get on with the guys, et cetera? When do you jump off listenership? Now, they might be cool dudes. When do you jump off listenership on Killswitch Engage?
Probably maybe the first record back with Jesse.
You go all the way through the Howard era?
I thought the Howard era was pretty good.
Wow.
I might be lost. Maybe no, you know what? Maybe all right. No, the more I think about it. No, if I'm thinking about it, to me it's three records. It's the Ferret record,
yep,
the first Roadrunner Jesse record, and the first Howard record are my three.
I'm open to the first Howard record. It's not making my list. That said, there was people that like their pantheon of metalcore starts with the second Howard record. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Starts.
I mean, which is a hit, just not.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I get it. I but that's the thing, right? Is now I'm trying to think of like a punk band that might have Green Day. We would all agree that the first big Green Day album is a good record. Can we agree on that? Is that an all right thing for this conversation? But
good record.
We may not agree about, we might not say the same thing about The Offspring or some shit, but The Offspring brought an incredible amount of young people into punk music, into guitar music, period, right? An incredible amount of people. And if one of these kind of like breakthrough metalcore albums, such as like the second Howard record, which I think had like a serious satellite hit on it or whatever, you know what I mean? If one of those brought you into this type of music, you're always going to have a warm feeling for it. It's always going to have a meaningful spot for you. But that's not me, right? Like I predate that a little bit, and it missed me. And so much of what people, you know, because metalcore Twitter is not Botch and Cave In. It's when somebody gives a Botch or Cave In take, it almost has like a whiff of old guy, like fucking
you have
dust
to blow,
on
the,
it.
Blow the dust off of it.
Yeah, you really do. And it's almost always said with like a, well, you kids don't fucking get it. You know, so people wade into those waters, but most of us are just like, all right, kids, go nuts, right? Like, talk about your Architects and, you know, which Parkway Drive record you think is acceptable and which isn't, you know, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And I am not mad at any of it. I just think that after a certain point, once those rooms were big enough, the music really took a nosedive. Like what Taylor was saying about Norma Jean, Taylor has played bigger rooms than Norma Jean. He can't cop like a Norma Jean isn't like fucking,
it's too,
you know,
sellout. Yeah.
Yeah, he can't do that. But Norma Jean is the actual limit for me personally. After you get like when metalcore hits over 1,000 cap room, there is very little bigger than 1,000 cap metalcore that I would ever willfully listen to.
So why is that? Why do you think that is? Like, do you think whatever makes it more accessible or popular,
yes,
like it
makes it
ass. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I was asked a question about the new Drug Church, and I've said it a million times. I think that what we learned from the metalcore era was that one of two things. Either you are an unoriginal person when your idea of progressing as a band is more melodic choruses. Either that's you being an unoriginal person, or and that, you know, and maybe that is actually how you feel, but that's an unoriginal perspective. Or perhaps you saw the curve of the world and you were pursuing a market, right? And I'm not, you know, listen, I think I'm probably past the stage of my life where I can muster up any condemnation for either one. I'm just saying that it's, for me, once you get to the approachability of some of these things, like I wonder about this. We went out to eat with our booking agent the other day. He wants to put us in these big ass rooms and everything. And part of me has this reflexive moment where I go, oh, if I'm in a room that big, I fucking suck. So that's just where, you know, that's there might be some you know, I don't think I have any success guilt or whatever because I'm not that successful, but maybe I'll arrive there if I fill a big enough room.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But there was, yeah, metalcore, MXC was with people were real mad that people were using that as a.
I think that's stupid. Call it MC. Who gives a fuck?
I don't care either way. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, listen.
March of time.
Exactly. The metalcore kids are going to inherit the earth. They can call themselves MC if they want. I don't give a shit. God bless. Motorcycle clubs, but.
Let me say this. This is like law of karma shit right here. If you don't like something, the bigger deal you make about it to the people who are doing it, the more they're going to do it. If you're hating on MXC, keep your full mouth shut and maybe it just disappeared.
Yeah.
If you hate on it.
Yeah. You're going to get like a young person who's oppositional, thinks that you're on some old guy shit. And it's just like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm MC for life. so, some bad takes out there, but look, it's where you jump off the fuck. And Bob, you might jump off at goddamn Hapri. You know what I mean? It's just people jump off at different stages of the fucking thing. It's fine.
That's right.
But, okay. Another topic. Want to talk about a bad week for a Squealer grind. There's a lot of different ways we could approach this, but I'm going to guess that none of us know the situation well enough to fucking weigh in on the actual fucking ins and outs of whatever the fuck whatever the fuck they're in trouble for or whatever. Now, everybody, if it's serious, we're not trying to minimize it. If it's goofy, we're not trying to fucking shine a spotlight on it and make their life any harder, okay? I just want to talk about the weird phenomenon of band doing well for whatever that means, right? In whatever scene, band doing well, and then somebody does the Emperor's Got No Clothes On shit, and the entire fucking internet goes to town. And I also, this was a thing for me. If I am friends with a band that I see them getting murdered online from now on, you can roast me too, because I'm jumping out and making it clear that, hey, those are my dudes. You know what I mean? Because something about a Squealer grind that shocked me. They've toured the United States more times. I was going to ask them on a Drug Church tour, not because I like the music, which I don't. I was going to ask them on a Drug Church tour because they work harder than any band in hardcore. That's the reason. It's because I respect touring. So when I saw that they've toured the United States 1,000 times,
yeah,
and nobody jumped out to say those are my dudes, I was like almost bummed to watch it. Do you know? Now, the three of us were in a group chat with somebody, a friend of ours, and I went hard on one of his friends, and he had the fortitude and the good intention of a friend to say, hey, could you please not shit on my friend in that respect, right?
Yeah,
and that's what he's supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do. When somebody is your boy, you say, hey.
That's my boy. Shut your mouth.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever. You don't even have to say shut your mouth. You just got to say, hey. So it's understood when you're going on your little thing. That's my man. You know what I mean? And that's fine. Like, I don't do the, hey, you got to limit what you say sort of thing. I just make it clear. Hey, that's my man. I love that guy. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, but that's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? Now, you can take it to an extreme. You can you can go to war for your friends, whatever. But, like, I just didn't see anybody jump out for a Squealer grind, and it almost made me want to go, I don't know, man. maybe they're cool. And I don't know them from Adam, you know? But the I don't like to see the pile on everybody. Don't fucking write me if it was something serious. Okay, but like I just don't like to see the pile on. What was your take?
The biggest takeaways for me was some people were worried that one of the members was a Freemason.
Oh yeah, irrelevant, everybody.
Right, and then another one was like, and so and so is rich, and that's how they can tour because so and so is rich. Let me put some on to you.
Yeah,
we'll see if you're going from bad to rich.
Let's give you some game here.
You know what? People aren't coming from Lower East Side anymore. FYI.
Yeah.
Because what those Discord punks were coming from the Lower East Side.
You're correct.
There's the big secret that's not a secret. You just have to look one step below. Is that somebody who's got a little bit of money from their folks is the reason somebody's 7-inch came out. Somebody have to pay a credit card bill is the reason this record label kept funding. Somebody who's got a good dad with a good job is the reason that tour van made it across the country. It's not everybody's story, but it's a lot.
But yeah, everybody, there's a lot of fucking, you know, financial advisors, orthodontists, et cetera, who have made hardcore fucking wheel spin. Now, I can get in my bag. There's some people in hardcore that are so fucking rich that I can, you know, and I come from a middle-class family. I'm got nothing but opportunity in my life. But there's some dudes who are so rich that I go, ah, come on, you son of a bitch, shut the fuck up. So I get it. And the singer of Escuela Grind was in photos with Laura Bush. But if you don't find that funny, you're insane. You're fucked in your fucking head if you don't.
Now I got to look for those photos.
Taking a photo with Laura Bush. Is her husband a war criminal? Yes. Is a photo with her funny? Fundamentally, yes, it is, obviously. So, like, listen. That's funny as shit. Listen, guys, if you ever see me in a photo with Laura Bush, it is what it is. You know, like I'll make it the album cover.
You're in Houston on, like, Wednesday. Maybe she'll come out.
Maybe.
Put her on the list.
Man. You know what? Family's on the list. The whole family's on the list. Now, here's the thing, everybody. Like, you know, you don't like this band, and you don't like that you think that they've gotten opportunities when they've got no tracks, and this is your opportunity to fucking put one in the chamber, fucking walk to the, you know, walk to the space where everybody's kicking them, and you can be the guy that hits the kill shot. Okay. But stop. You know what I mean? Like, you don't feel strongly about this band, and half of you don't even know what the fuck they're being yelled at for. When you're bringing up Freemasonry, what in the goddamn hell? I hate to be this guy. I hate when people do this shit, but I don't know. There is other things going on in life. You know what I mean? Like, there is things, but you could adopt a dog. You could go to a protest for a cause that matters to you. You know what I mean? Like, you could go to a grocery store, have a pleasant conversation, and turn it into a date where you go get a bagel and a coffee with a nice person. And you could walk around man-made lake.
These conversations, I'll take someone posting Yelp reviews over whatever the hell this is. This is wild ass. Come on.
So yeah, everybody, listen, I get it. We've seen it up close a couple times. The green light goes on a band, and everybody goes, yeah, you know what? I hate them. And I've always hated them. And thank you for giving me the green light. But there was somebody got retweeted a lot on this, and I think there's something to it. And I'll ask you guys your feelings. The person's tweet was something to the effect of, there's a lot of sub-mid bands that people pretend to like because they have the correct politics. And then when they run afoul of those stated ideals, everybody suddenly drops to, they always fucking suck. Now, is that a phenomenon that you guys have witnessed?
Yes.
And do we think that might have occurred here?
Yes. I mean, look, Escuela Grind, I don't know that I've ever listened. I'm not going to lie. 54.6 thousand followers on Instagram. a lot of streams. Someone's listening. Someone's getting on board. Are they a starter band? Probably. Are they anyone's favorite band? I don't know. But when you see the pile on like this, it's just... I just want to sum it up. I avoided most of this in my feeds and timelines and have been busy, so I haven't seen it. So I Googled Laura Bush Escuela Grind because I want to see that thing. That sounds funny. And saw someone, the first two results are a Twitter account saying, what's going on with the Escuela Grind me? I don't know, but it has something to do with Laura Bush and the Freemasons. The other one being a Loudwire something. Why is everyone talking about the Escuela Grind feud? And so, which is to say, what? No one cares. No one cares. Don't care.
I mean,
you like the Escuela Grind? Enjoy. If there was some actual crime committed, happy to hear the story. But to be honest, I don't care. Don't care about the band. Don't care what they're doing.
Yeah.
But this, all right, I think we could do like our own episode on this, but I think this goes back to the Stuckman.
Oh, yeah.
Controversy. Because I feel like no one is allowed to give a free and honest opinion on a record. So the only time you really can be honest is when they're already down.
So, okay. Yes. This is something we've touched on a bit, is the idea of what criticism is now. And like, look, it's not just now. I've actually seen this. I saw someone talking about it, how in the 90s there was this moment where it was like, if you said something negative about a record, you didn't like it, and a zine, people would flame your ass. People got mad. We're in this weird moment, and hardcore is a weird space for it. Hardcore, metal, adjacent, punk, whatever, where if you have a platform of any size, you can be seen as just taking shots. Like, you're just pissing on this. You say you don't like something, it's not because you don't like it. You must have some ulterior motive. You're doing this. And that's just not what it is. I mean, when you're out here trying to actually talk about things, to me, and I know a lot of other people who would say the same, I think both of you agree with this, when someone says they like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, when they get to J, I don't particularly care. I'm going to be like, yeah, you like J too. All right. But when someone says, I like this, I don't like that, I don't like that, I don't like that is classic. I like this, nah, not so much. All of a sudden, the weight of their words rings more true because I can understand they're showing a balance of what they like and what they don't like. You know, they have some discretion, right? That isn't seen. There's a lot of different ways people can take it. We've talked about it a bit, but the situation Tom's referencing, I know Pat's referenced it too, is like this really shining light of where we're at in terms of an attention commodity. And the only way you show that you don't like something is by not talking about it, which then in result is your voice only talks about things you like. And that's tough.
But it's also incredibly revealing. It has the same effect. The guy who does the Metal Gear games, what's his name?
Snake.
Kojira, right?
Kojira?
Am I right? No. Whatever. Hideki Kojira.
The guy who does
whatever,
the metal what?
The Metal Gear games. He's one of the biggest names in gaming. It's just escaping me right now. Anyway, he does these film reviews. He loves film. He watches like 3 movies a day. And he does these reviews on Twitter where if he likes something, he goes deeply into depth about it. And we'll talk with just effusive praise, but also not really criticism. It's almost like a scientist looking at something. And then he'll also say, watch Madame Web, or watch Madame Web, right? Now, that obviously means something because he didn't say anything about the actual craft of the thing. He just said, I watched it. That is, and people, it's now a meme.
It's like coded language. But
yeah, it's more cutting than anything than you could actually deliver. Now, friend of this podcast, Brian Murray, youth crew refugee, he has said, we are in an era where if you criticize a band's music, you sound like a hater. So the only thing you're allowed to do is criticize them on moral grounds or attack them as people, say that they're, you know, these are like, fuck these dudes. You're not allowed to actually give any sort of analysis from your ear.
And I think you say my record sucks.
No, yeah, for sure. I lose no sleep if you say my record sucks. So, you know, I think that there's something to that too. We are certainly in a moment where, you know, broadly, it's a good vibe, but that vibe is shifting, maybe in part because we, in an effort to keep the vibe going, we let a couple things fester. We didn't talk about our feelings. We didn't talk about why we think, oh, this fucking sucks. And I don't know. I hope on this podcast. Now, obviously, listeners whose records we have not been positive about probably don't have a good feeling about us, might not come back. But I hope that even if they say, yeah, I don't fuck with those dudes, they're obviously deaf, they don't like my dope fucking record, even if they're sitting around saying that, I hope that they understand I didn't say it because I want them to fail. You know, like I didn't say it because I don't want them to have shit or I think that people that listen to them are fucking stupid. I just, you know, I just didn't like your record. I you know, you're still, you know, this is the Brotherhood of Man. I'm still, I still embrace you as my peer and my, you know what I mean? Like I'm happy to have you at my table. I just didn't care for your record. Not a big deal. You know, and as we've talked about, that's obviously easier for someone. I've put out a lot of records. It's easy for me to take those criticisms. If it's your first record and you put your soul into it and you hear somebody that doesn't like it, I understand. But I really hope that there's some understanding that there is a difference fundamentally between hating and just saying, I don't like that fucking record. I'll tell my friends to their faces, I don't like your fucking record. You know what I mean? And those are people I love. You know? And so there's a difference, everybody. And you don't got to wait until a band is in the line of fire for being Freemasons to jump out and do this thing. You don't, you could just say, I don't fuck with that. I don't like that.
You know, I put up with it with the Freemason stuff, but it was that Laura Bush photo pushed me over the edge. That was it. we will need to do a definitive whole episode on this whole thing because there's a lot and there's a lot to say about it because I just think people would, I think you would get better conversation if you're allowed to say, I don't like this, you know, and we, you know, it's better when you can get that. And I get it why someone wouldn't want to hear someone say, hey, I don't like your record. But when you say more than this is buns, you can understand it. And especially like, look, taking ourselves out of it. There's long form stuff here. There's people with resumes and it's never been easier to backtrack through it. Now, will that maybe not be something that matters? Somebody in the minute where they're upset or hurt by a review? Nah, maybe not. But being able to see a pattern, like, yo, if I review the Norma Jean 2025 reunion record, that shit ain't for fucking me. I'm going to give you my opinion on it. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to do what I can. But that's like, there's a reason that exists is so you can start to hear, oh, this person likes this kind of stuff. They don't like that kind of stuff. Oh, what they like. So circling it all the way back, Ouroboros on this is Alkaline Trio is a band I'm familiar with. I have special look, many of my friends in California, that was their band. That was it. Which is like, this is the imprinted on them. So many Alkaline Trio tattoos. That said, I tried, wasn't for me. With that Good Morning record, I listened to the whole thing. Not for me. We did a podcast on it, and I sift through it. I do notes on it. I go into it because, and I think I've said this about the Code Orange material that both you guys feel really good about and really enjoy, never hit for me. I listen to that five times as much, if not more, and harder to figure out why I didn't like it. Because if I'm going to speak on it, I didn't want to come off as some dude who was just hate because it was metalcore or some shit. You know what I mean? No, I wanted to say what it was about it that I didn't like so that someone could go, oh, yeah, you don't like that? I do like that. Cool.
That's cool. You know what I mean? And then you also hit the event horizon of, or the escape velocity, I guess, of, yo, I cannot even talk about that. Not, I just don't understand it at all. And it's outside what I feel comfortable even speaking on, because it's just, I'll
accept that from someone who doesn't want to put the time in on it. You know what I mean?
But I think there's stuff beyond that. I think like, harsh noise, power electronics, some grind, I could listen to like the standout bands and or the standout acts in each one. I could probably go, yeah, I find the merit. But if you wanted to give me a B tier extreme grind band and sure. say, give me a real review of this, I right. would say I'm not that guy.
Right. I would say that there's me. Yeah, right. Like it's how deep in that pool have you ever swum? If someone handed me jazz records, I'd be like,
I could say, yeah, you know, I like the part.
It's
where
pleasant to me, or it's not, yeah. and, you know, and it's the kind of thing where you have to spend time in. Yes, correct. That's exactly right. So anyways, long conversation. Tom, did you like earlier today? This is the first time, Patrick, I will give you credit for it. This is the first time I believe that he's pulled the, I have to get on stage. I don't know if I can do.
I can't do 2 hours of talking and then get up there. What would it do to my voice? Pavarotti doesn't talk before a set.
I will say that in these big rooms where you can actually hear me and I can't pretend that, this is a shit PA or whatever. You can tell when I'm ass here, and it is, so I'm trying to be mindful. Like I was recording Drug Church tracks the 2 days before our first show of this tour. And it's just, I'm not going to sound fucking good. And I'm doing my best. I'm not like,
look, do you warm up?
No, I hum a little bit, but like we've done tours with Turnstile. Brendan does his vocal warmups. We just did a tour with Citizen. Matt does the whole like, yeah, yo. These dudes are walking around doing the whole fucking thing. I do a little. I don't even know if that does anything. I'm just trying to feel a little bit warmer when I get scales? On stage. No, because I don't know notes.
I mean, like you go to YouTube, like, and then you just follow that. It's like it's like da 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 da, and just keep going up until it just like gets like your, it just opens you up, man. You only got to do it for 15 minutes, and you get Pedialyte.
This is a question that maybe is for another episode, and let's find a way to make it not about Patrick, because I know I would feel agonized if I was a listener who did not like me and we were just fucking talking about Drug Church all the time. But a question that I was asked a question, I think the Washington Post, the other day,
drop something, NBD.
I believe it was the Washington Post that asked me this question. You know what I mean? They were curious.
Oh, Jeff Bezos, way to go.
They were curious.
It was in something. It was it the time?
What was it?
Wall Street Journal. No, it was the Washington Post. That's right. That's right.
Who owned it? Murdoch? Jeff Bezos.
It was Jeff. Remember, because he texted you before?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. He WhatsApped me. So everybody asks about Turnstile and the effect that they've had on the scene and what it's done for bands. And it's, you know, we've covered it here quite a bit, but this is a question for a future episode. My argument was, I'm very happy for their success, and I'm not, obviously I would like more success in my own life. However, I do personally, and you guys can tell me if this is like self-defeating or a little like hardcore guilt or something, I do personally think that there is a cutoff on the size room that you want to see a band with a guy barking in it. Like there is a cap to the size. Like I would not want to see what I do at Yankee Stadium. You know what I mean? Like I would not want to see it at Red Rocks, I think that that's a question. It doesn't have to be about me and my inability to sing, but like, is there like Slayer was a big band. And if you look at it objectively, it's almost difficult to imagine that something with that sound could ever get as big as it was or is, but that's just, isn't that part of the beauty of the whole thing? You never know. You don't know what you don't know. Right. However, if you just had to sort of throw out your ideas for what size you want to see something at without hating, you know, I mean, we're not hating. We're not saying it's got to stay that size. We're just saying, what's the biggest size room? That's a conversation for another episode. What's the biggest size room?
I think it depends on the response. You know, like, do I want to see you be the opening band for U2 at MSG? And there's 400 people in an 18,000 cap and you're up there just fucking flailing. No, that's brutal. But if you're doing what you're doing and there's 18,000 people singing fucking Grubby back at you, I don't give a shit if you can sing like, you know, like we have a lot of friends bands and bands that, you know, are adjacent to hardcore that have gone a long way for not being able to really sing very well.
There's a Robbie Williams song. Late era Robbie Williams.
I only know Angels. And I watch that because watching that sing along, it's still one of the coolest things you'll ever see.
He has a line where he says, can't dance, can't sing, but I've made it this far. You'd think you'd be happy for me. Yeah.
So that's like your next tattoo is what you're saying.
He's just addressing the haters. He's just saying like, come on, guys. Like, yeah, I'm a no talent, but isn't that kind of cool? You know,
look how far I got.
Yeah.
That's a grind. But, address the haters.
All right.